So, Dean, what I like about this scenario is that nothing's on fire. Nothing's fallen out of the sky. There's not even any real danger. And yet, we're in a dilemma. It's safe, but it's not legal. And from day one, which drilled into us about how we do have to follow these FARs, about how things are put together. Let's suppose you do your task here. You try and remove the safety wire and you snap it. And so now there's no way to fix it. How are you going to keep yourself from just closing the cowl and saying, no one's ever going to know I'm going back to Chelan?
That's a great question, and it absolutely is very tempting to just close the cowling and fly home. And as I mentioned, that the mechanical, clear thinking side of me, if I'm only looking at this one issue, I would be very tempted to just do that, to just fly home, because I am absolutely very sure the oil filter is not going to become loose and leak oil. So, yes, it's very tempting, but as in so many scenarios in aviation, we have to think about the full picture and the big picture view. And how many times have we examined an accident chain where there was one thing that led to another, to another, to another? And if we don't stop for something so insignificant as this one, then where do we stop? So in looking at the big picture, I'm also reminded how when you make the conservative or the what you consider to be the right decision in the moment, even though it's difficult, you can oftentimes look back later and be thankful you did that, because you realize that something that was unforeseen either happened or didn't happen, the whole scenario turned out better because you made the right choice. So it is definitely tempting to just fly home, but as you're sitting around telling this story later, it would be a much better teaching opportunity to have said, even though it was difficult, I chose to do the right thing.
Paul.
Well, I'm going to be the bad boy here and yield to temptation. I would cow it up and fly home. If you look at all these choices, there are two things to consider. The primary one is, what is the risk? And we all agree that there's not a dime's worth of difference in risk between all of them. You're going to get home with the filter on. And if I think about all the engine failure research I've done, I don't think I've ever seen one where an oil filter came off, but other things that should be safety wired or AB nut type things do fall off. So those are the ones to watch for. I think the slippery slope argument is a good one, but I don't think this gets you to the edge, because if you make a value judgment on it and say, well, you know, this is really safe, I'm just virtue signaling to myself, because somehow I don't have the discipline to or the experience to recognize when I really am getting on the slope and really taking chances that I shouldn't on maintenance items. And yeah, I'll admit that it's an airworthiness thing. It's not strictly legal. So sue me.
Michael, then Dave.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with Paul. And I pride myself on trying to be a conservative aviator and take the conservative route all the time. But I also always operate my airplanes in a common sense manner. And for me, leaving the safety wire on there, it's not doing any harm. It's actually going to help the thing to keep from spinning off. Really, it's not pulling on it that hard. It's tight already. Get in the airplane, go home, and fix it when you get there.
Dave?
Yeah, this is the sort of aviation version of the Hippocratic Oath, where it's like, first, do no harm. And if I try to MacGyver this thing, I'm going to end up breaking it. I'm going to have no safety wire whatsoever. I'd do my own oil changes, like probably lots of us here. And this is a true confession. I have safety wired the oil filter on backwards before. And the last time, I didn't really discover it till I was trying to take the oil filter off and found it. It's like, wow, it's safety wired backwards. And I forgot that it was on there in any way. I've got my 1-inch wrench and I'm trying to turn it off. And it's like, okay, it goes a quarter turn and then it stops. You know, even with the safety wire put on there incorrectly. And it's like, hey, I love A&P mechanics. They're fantastic people. They get completely obsessive compulsive about safety wire. And it's got to look pretty in addition to doing its job of keeping things together. And it's like, I'm not interested in the twisty art aspect of this. It's torqued properly. It's on there. Don't do any harm. Don't break anything. Go home and fix it.
Dean to defend himself, then John.
I have to beg to differ with you very much, Dave, on that how pretty the safety wire is, because even though it's cosmetic, this may not be the case for you, but I've seen a lot of nasty looking safety wiring. And what it does for me is it tells a story. It makes me wonder what kind of other shady maintenance has this person done on this airplane. And sometimes it may be that whoever put that safety wire on just does not know how to use good, solid, proper procedures. So I personally feel like safety wiring tells a story. And so sign your work with some nice safety wiring that you can be proud of.
John.
Yeah, I agree. The safety wire is an art, and it's one that I think we can all learn. But I think we're all in agreement that there's really no danger here for the oil filter coming loose. But I think what's more important is the creeping attitude, the compliance creep or the regulatory creep. You know, this is, okay, I'm only 10 pounds over gross. I know the airplane will fly. Well, 15 pounds over gross, 20 pounds over gross. When do you get, you know, is it 90 days for takeoff and landings, or is it 91 days? Am I any more or less safe? And it's that creeping compliance thing that really worries me more about this.
Richard.
Yeah, I also would just close the cowl and fly it back. And I'm not sure this is a compliance creep issue, because you're dealing with the situation where it is out in the field and you got to get your airplane home. There's virtually no risk to doing it. Now, it'd be different if you were in the hangar and you open it up and you saw it and you just said, I'll get it next oil change, right? That's compliance creep in my mind. But in this case, you're just doing the most logical, safest thing that you can do to get the airplane home.
Well, now I'm going to defend Dean a little bit here, saying that we've got a number of people who have some pretty big megaphones out there in the world, and you're all just said, I'm going to fly this airplane home, even though I know it's technically unairworthy, and got a number of CFIs here as well. How do you address Dean's comment about example here? How you help somebody draw the line? How is this different from, you know, the CFI saying to the student pilot to check the landing light because it was on the pre-flight before a flight, and said, hey, the landing light's out for this day VFR flight. And CFI says, you know what? You didn't check that landing light. We don't know about it. Therefore, it's not enough. We can go fly. How do you help somebody parse that out so they don't end up on the slippery slope that Paul was talking about?
The learner has to learn somewhere. I mean, the reality is that if you make judgments based on hard-edged regulatory requirements, and sometimes you have to, and in some cases you should, and in some cases you can't, you have to know the difference. Somewhere you have to know the difference between a fine point of regulatory, basically a slight, in what is really hazardous. And while I wouldn't encourage a student to do this, you know, say you take your student on a cross country, and at night you land somewhere and landing light goes out. Okay, well, I teach students to land and take off without a landing light. That's a perfectly plausible thing to do and a good skill to have. Is it technically legal? No, because the regulation says you have to have an electric landing light. But we do that anyway. It's called reality.
Dave.
Let's keep our eye on the big picture here. And the big picture is we all want to do what's safe and reasonable. And this whole thing about virtue and slippery slope, and if I compromise here, I'm going to be cheating on my wife next week. I'm going to be cheating on my taxes after that. It's like, that does not wash. I mean, it's like, this is an isolated incident. This is one decision. It's not going to affect, you know, your moral compass the rest of your life. Get over yourself, do something safe and reasonable. Dean said the common sense answer is to close the cowl. I couldn't agree more. Let's use our common sense.
So we've got a number of people here who've been into backcountry airstrips for sure. And it's not so much the backcountry that's the problem here. It's the fact that it's remote and you don't have resources, right? What tips or, you know, even stories for that matter about what you do and you don't go check at a backcountry airport? I remember back in the day taking, you know, Cessna singles into grass strips in Washington State. We would always, if we had to check the flaps at all, I'd only put them out to 10 degrees because if they went down below 10 and I couldn't get them up, we were hiking out. But I could take off and fly home all the way at 10. I'm wondering if there are other things like that that say, hey, if you're at a remote spot, there are things you really do want to check and there are things that, like, don't worry about so much. Are there any comments like that? Dean?
Yeah, in thinking about that whole thing of should you check certain things or should you not, if I think about checking something, I would like to go ahead and check it. I used to have a boss that I think he got frustrated with me when I would look at things that were beyond the scope of the particular project. And for me, I would rather know it's there, even if I make the decision to fly home anyway, because occasionally you might see something that truly is dangerous. And you would want to know about that. So I would rather look at things that some people might think are too, they might say don't look at that, but I would rather look at it so that I would catch the dangerous thing, even if I do make the decision to fly home with some issue that exists.
Paul, you mentioned that there were things that like should be safety wired on that aren't, or other things that are potentially more of an issue that you could come across. What are some of those things that do fall off airplanes and people should be paying attention to on their pre-flights that maybe they're not?
Fuel lines are a favorite. Hydraulic lines also, and brake lines. And I mentioned the A and B nut. Dean will know more about this than I do, but they are not safety wire, but they're properly torqued. And in my airplane, the sump plug is safety wire. And so is the oil screen. And those are items that probably would be a no-go for me because they could come out. But a filter is different. I used to change the oil for our club airplanes when I lived in Connecticut. And I found them not safetied plenty of times. I don't ever remember seeing one safetied incorrectly. And the other example is, you know, you're walking along and you come to the landing light frame. It's missing a screw. Okay, now what? The cowl is missing a cam lock. Oh, well, okay, what do we do there? And I've flown so many airplanes with missing cam locks that I can't even count them. And okay, now along comes learner. Along comes the learner and says, shouldn't that be there? Yeah, it should. Well, why are we flying? Now you have to explain it. And I'll admit it's not an easy explanation, but again, it's reality. These things happen out in the real world.
Dean?
There's another thought that's coming to mind for me here, and I'm still standing by my decision on this one. However, I firmly agree with all of you guys who say we should engage our common sense. And this is the thought that has just come to me. I guarantee there are a lot of airplane oil filters that were not torqued properly, but they have beautiful safety wire on them. And so in all this discussion, I would have to confidently say that a filter that was properly torqued to 16 to 18 foot-pounds, like it says on the filter, with no safety wire, is definitely more airworthy than one that was torqued too loosely and has a beautiful safety wire on it, for what that's worth.
Well, let's pick up on that for just a second there, Dean, because I want to pick up on something that you said earlier about sloppy maintenance or things that just don't look like they're quite right being indicative of the state of the airplane overall. Is that something that's shared by other folks around the table? I mean, if you, especially you, Dave, you definitely fly in a whole bunch of other people's airplanes. Do you have that sense when you come up to the plane of like, looking around, actually looking for how, you know, clean things are, how well things are put together, like how this plane has been kept, or anyone who owns an airplane coming out of maintenance, you know, you get a better feeling going into a shop a lot of times that's clean and tidy than a shop that's, you know, got grease everywhere and, you know, stuff falling out of the ceiling. What would you say?
Yeah, you know, I'm a total stickler for some things. It's like, okay, you know, we'll give the mechanics, you know, their beautiful, beautiful safety wire. It's like pilots, it's like, I want to land on the center line. No, I want to be on speed. It's like, I'll tie myself in knots doing things like that. And when it comes to airplanes, it's like, absolutely cleanliness. I'm OCD on that. You know, I want a clean windshield. You know, I want the bugs off the leading edges. You know, I mean, it's like, it's not that I'm super fastidious in the rest of my life, but it's like, as Dean was hinting, it's like, that's an indication, you know, an airplane that's kept clean is probably kept in a little better mechanical care too, because you can notice things. To me, this whole scenario is all about common sense, safety, do what's reasonable, you know, don't get too wrapped around the axle about these minor details. Try to recognize what's a minor detail and what's not.
Yeah, Jeff, I think it is an indicator of how somebody keeps their airplane and how much confidence you can have in it, with the exception of safety wiring, because I do a lot of my own maintenance, and a safety wiring, like really nice safety wiring, like A&Ps do so well, is really hard to do. So there's plenty of times where I just do it to where it looks horrible, but it satisfies the bill for what it's supposed to do. So that would be my one pass that I would give for the art of safety wiring.
High marks for honesty on everyone for this scenario. And if I have to pull out one thread to kind of sum things up, I really liked what Dave said about the sort of Hippocratic Oath here and do no harm, right? That is a way of looking at the kind of common sense, you know, position you're going to be in. Is there risk here? No. Can I make it worse if I bungle trying to make it better? Yes, I certainly can. And Dean is probably the one who would be best at being able to do it. I would just make a mess of the entire thing. My attempt at rewiring it would look worse than Paul's safety wiring, I'm sure. So the takeaway here, though, I think if you take that idea of do no harm, there's no harm in terms of safety. Is there, you know, a potential regulatory harm down the line if I ever get caught? Maybe, probably not. Is there a harm if I'm have to retell this story and I'm an example to somebody else? Yeah, I'm going to have to be very clear about why I did what I did and feel that it's defendable. So I could definitely see that. But no matter how you look at it, like picking your own risk tolerance, risk aversion, you're going to have to pick your own, you know, potential harm tolerance here, if you will, to decide how you're going to get out of this airport, either just closing the cowl or going through the whole process of getting it exactly right, both in terms of safety and in terms of legality.